Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that is as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today we'll be talking, My Life Runs on Food. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, feel free to give us a ring. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. As always, we bring food greatness before mainstream media. In the studio, we welcome food blogger Sonora Weathers. Her exciting online platform is My Life Runs on Food. Sonora, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hello.
So glad you're here, darling.
Thank you for having me.
So we gotta jump right into this. Last week, I posted a question on my social media accounts, Facebook and Twitter. And I basically said, serving fried chicken to honor Black History Month, yay or nay, or yes or no. I got a few comments. Cranky Boots Pops, I think they're based in California, said, I think no. It plays into too many stereotypes, and there are several other dishes which could be served. Another comment said, this is Paddington 0808. It depends on who the target audience is. What's this person's name? Yoloya? Sorry, girl. I can't pronounce your name. She said, no, other foods with substance and tradition. So, Sonara, what do you think? Yay or nay? Serving fried chicken to honor Black History Month.
I'm going to go ahead and say yay. It kind of reminds me of a story of this Asian girlfriend I had when I was in school who did not like rice. And we're coming from a school that was very vicious. People were teasing different people's ethnicity. And I knew why she didn't like rice. It's because she it was a negative association with her. But I remember when we were talking about it, I had to explain to her, rice is served all over the world, from Africa, even in Asia, to European, South America. It's a traditional dish, but we just associate it or stereotype it often with Asian communities. And I think that is what it is with fried chicken. It's, let's not lie to ourselves. African Americans, we love fried chicken.
Everybody loves fried chicken, though.
Everybody does.
I'm going to have to say, Sonar, I'm on the hell no.
Really?
Yeah, I'm on the hell no. And I'm going to read a few of my Facebook comments. Did anyone say hell no? Oh, one person. No one said no. Someone said heck yeah. Someone said why not. Of course, someone basically said the same thing. Now we know we love us some fried chicken. Melissa Danielle, who's been on the show a million times, says she didn't say anything. She's just like, which raises a good point and why I feel like no. Mm-hmm. Why is fried chicken part of Black food culture and not necessarily Southern food culture?
Exactly.
So I say no. I feel like two things. There are Black people, we have so many contributions in the mm-hmm. world of food, and just to whittle us down to fried chicken, why not talk about the complete history of rice and how we basically brought the cultivation of rice here? Mm-hmm. I say yay. I say no. I really say no.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I'm saying no is actually Daniel Bowen Simon sent me article that was in Gothamist about, was it Citibank, Sonar?
Citibank. There was two articles that were sent, definitely about the Citibank menu, and then there was the one, the incident that happened last year with Quest, I think.
Questlove, from the Roots. Yeah, so last year during Black History Month, Questlove from the Roots tweeted that in NBC Studios, they were serving fried chicken. And I think he tweeted a picture of the menu. Mm-hmm. People were like, some people were pissed and some people were like, yeah, that's fine. And then Citibank did the same thing, I guess, last week. And they had Black History Table, crusted fried chicken, meatloaf, Savannah meatloaf. I mean, it's like cool, but what else are they doing?
Mm-hmm. I think when people get offended with fried chicken served, it's another point I wanted to bring out was it kind of pinches our heart because we know that we're just not just a group of people that should be defined by fried chicken. We're just multi personalities and complex. But why do we always have this one dish that defines on who we are? And, you know, it's interesting concerning that link that you sent me. There was another incident that happened a few years ago where somebody was talking about another office cafeteria posting a menu honoring African American. And it was interesting because the guy tweeted or Facebooked and it went all over the world or something. And at the end of the day, he ended up offending the cafeteria lady because she said she did it from her heart and she's been looking forward to doing this menu for months, and she was deeply upset that people were offended by the menu. So that's why
I guess I definitely respect a person if that is their only way, or a company only way to get in Black History Month something. And I guess I can kind of see them serving fried chicken, but I feel like folks have to take it beyond the fried chicken thing. And I think, because when I think fried chicken, you grew up in the South.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you're originally, your roots, your family roots are in the South, right?
Like most African American, yes.
Right. So, I mean, I think we both can say that fried chicken is not just a Black thing.
No.
But I think the method of frying food, we know that it is traced back to West Africa. But no one really talks about that. They just, you know, fried chicken and they just move on.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, for my few little Facebook fans and Twitter folks, people are saying, yay. Serve the fried chicken to honor.
I see both sides. I definitely understand both sides of it. I know sometimes I feel a little uncomfortable if I hear African American month being, and then fried chicken is only one being served.
Okay, so we have a caller on the line. Caller, you want to weigh in on the serving fried chicken to honor Black History Month?
Yeah, I think it's rather unfortunate. I think there's a million other traditions and dishes that African Americans have brought to this country. You know, part of the American cuisine, really the only American cuisine, is what African Americans have brought. And you know, Creole and places in Louisiana, there's so many things to explore. Peanuts and,
right.
and chicken, you know, there's all kinds. It's just stereotypical to limit it to chicken. I mean, why not include watermelon while we're at it? You know what I mean? It's just very stereotypical.
And Carla, where are you calling from? Are you based in New York?
I'm calling from Oakland, California.
Oakland in the house.
Wow.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, I definitely feel like there's so many other things, just like you mentioned, okra, but just dwindling it down to fried chicken, I think it's kind of lazy for cafeteria workers or even corporations such as Citibank, who did this, and the NBC studios, just to say, yeah, it's acceptable to serve fried chicken to honor Black History Month. And your name, caller?
It's Amanda Yee. And I would agree, it is extremely lazy, and it's just African American food. Traditionally, it didn't even start out with meat. It was vegetarian,
exactly.
So there's no understanding of the African American culture. It's just basic, like, okay, this is our understanding of African Americans. It's chicken, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Totally agree, ridiculous. Amanda. Totally agree. Thank you, Amanda, so much for calling. Keep listening to the rest of the show.
I will.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Okay, Sonar, so we had a call in. That's great. People are listening. I'm sure we have many more people that are kind of lurking. Callers, listeners, if you want to call in, we're going to take a short break and come back with more Sonar Weathers. Keep listening.
Morning light, silken dream, take flight as the darkness gives way to the dawn. You survived, now your moment has arrived, now your dream has finally been born.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
If you're just tuning in live, we are chatting with Sonar Weathers, a Brooklyn-based food blogger, creative, and social media online manager. Sonar's blog, My Life Runs on Food, won the 2010 Black We Blog's Best Cooking or Food Blog. Hands down, Sonar, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I think that your blog, My Life Runs on Food, should be included in the same category, the same blog list as Smitten Kitchen, Cooks 101.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Yeah, I think you have the best fresh content. Tell our listeners about your blog, more about your blog.
Well, it was started after Facebook posts of recipes or of dishes that I was making. And eventually people were saying, you know, you should start a food blog. And so I started the food blog and it started off very small. And then from there, it just grew from that Facebook post. And it was a whole new platform, and there's a lot to learn when doing a food blog, but it was a unique way of applying my passion about food instead of opening a restaurant, which I didn't want to do. But there's another way to talk about it.
So were you posting your recipes just on your Facebook page every day or every week?
Probably whenever I cook. It's the same process that I use for the site right now. Whatever I cook is eventually I add it into the editorial calendar.
So that was one of my questions. Really, what is your process and how do you plan your posts? Do you sit down on Sunday and say, okay, this is what I'm cooking for the week and I am going to blog this, I'm going to have my camera ready? What's your process?
It's loosely based on seasonal fruits and vegetables, what I find at the farmer's market or what I get from the farm share. I'm part of the Bed-Stuy Farm Share in the summertime. And from there, I just whatever I cook. I don't really have a plan. It's just whatever I cook, I take a picture. The camera is ready. I don't have any fancy lighting equipment. I just take the picture and I make sure to do it during the day because that's the best light. And I just, from the picture, I post it on Facebook, on Tumblr or Twitter. And then a few weeks later, I write the story behind it. So a lot of the posts, a lot of the pictures that you see, and I always put coming soon, recipe posting coming soon, it actually appears a few weeks later. It's not right there. I wish I can get better at, as soon as I cook a dish, the next day I write about it and bam, it's right there. But I kind of do that to cushion myself. So I don't set schedule. I am on set schedule because I do have a calendar, but I like that feeling of just being in the moment with the food blog.
So are you keeping a food journal as you're cooking to make your notes? And then you go back to your notes and to create your recipe for readers?
I've learned I had to do this, especially when it's a recipe that I created from my mind. I have to write just the ingredients and the directions immediately after I do a recipe. And then I just save the Word document. And then eventually I'll come back to the story. Usually the story forms in my head, like such as what is the event surrounding the story? Maybe a memory, a dish that I'm passionate about. It's a dish that my father has cooked for me. Just any topic, and the story kind of forms. It takes a while to write. It's not, sometimes the story comes, the writing comes just really fast, and then sometimes it just takes a long time. So that's why it kind of takes a few weeks for me to write it.
Gotcha. So your page says healthy food. And I've been having this conversation for the last 2 weeks. You were part of the initial blow up of what do you think people, are operating off the same definition of healthy? Because I keep talking to people and there are so many definitions of healthy food. What is your definition in terms of your blog?
In terms of my blog, myself, is I don't have one particular, I don't disregard one particular ingredient. I am not one of those people who says you can never have any salt, no butter, no sugar. I like a balanced meal. Sometimes you eat a salad one day and then you have a chocolate cake the next day. My definition of a healthy food are people who take the time to go out and find the story behind the food, the source of the ingredients. That is the most healthiest way to approach food. And then you make decisions based on what's healthy for your diet. Oftentimes, I don't think people understand that they're eating processed food. I don't think people they don't really read the labels when they go to the grocery store.
Because all these vegan people walking around here thinking, I'm sorry, they're walking here thinking that that processed soy, whatever, vegan food is so healthy.
Yes. Yes.
And I mean, that is not, mm-hmm. I mean, there is nothing wrong with using meat substitutes at some time. But if 100% of your diet is all soy-based meat substitute process, that's a problem.
It is. To me, a good diet is one, and this is for me, you know, everybody's different. And that's what I mean. Like, everybody has to make decisions that's,
yeah,
best for their health. To me, works for me is a diet that has more vegetables on the plate, definitely grains, but meat is more of a side dish. The vegetables is the main dish.
Do you eat meat? I've never
do eat meat. I just don't eat pork or beef. It is not because I think it's unhealthy or I think evil of it. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
But I do love prosciutto. And what else do I like? I do like lamb a little bit. I can't eat it when it's very gamey. I'm just not a red meat person.
Yeah, I understand that. Speaking of meats, and the reason why I asked you that, because I'm a fan. I'm a true fan of your website. And one of my favorite recipes is the lemon poppy seed pancakes.
Yeah.
I love like all the stuff that I have a huge sweet tooth. So mm-hmm. Of course I'm going to love the lemon poppy seed pancakes. But what are some of the readers' favorite or most visited recipes on your website?
Oh, wow. You know what surprised me is a smoothie. People comment about my smoothie series.
Really?
And the number one, I went back and looked at my site to see what the top 5 recipes are that people visited the most, was smoothie number 9, raspberry yogurt.
Really?
Yes, I was very, and I'm wondering, like, where did that come from? So,
So, yogurt, what else? Is it sweet stuff or is it salads?
The next one would be vanilla chai ice cream. And I had a picture of that.
That picture is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. That was a good ice cream. I finally did an ice cream that was delicious. And the cardamom was the added touch to it. And I think I paired it with banana pecan bread. The next popular post, just like, actually, the next one was lemon yogurt cake. And that's a recipe by Ina Garden.
Yeah. We love Ina. Her and Jeffrey, the husband.
They're a cute couple. And I like that recipe because if I'm ever invited to a place and it's a potluck and it's a last minute, it literally takes an hour and a half to make it, cook it, wrap it up, and be on my way. And it's pretty healthy. I like adding olive oil to it instead of just regular vegetable oil, and it's making yogurt. It's really good. And the next one that's popular is the almond poppy seed cake.
That's funny that you said that, because the lemon poppy seed and the almond poppy seed cake are my two favorite recipes on your blog.
And that does get a lot of hits. It's one of my favorite cakes too. Definitely good for the spring.
Yeah, it is. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more Miss Weathers. Keep tuning in, live listeners.
When the scene unfolds, young girls, 13 years old, exposed on shit. Too many tongues, they can hate. Got more stress marks than these hoes. I let they got rank. See Sega ain't in this new world, all tough them. Experimenting in Atlanta, Georgia, United Nations overseas. Train assassins, do search and seize. Ain't knocking or asking. The woman throw the books like me. Put white trash like they. Drinks like guns. Back in slavery. Concentration camp slaves with gas pipelines. Infernos out those like they had back. But they don't pick them.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. This program is being sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. It is so crowded here, I guess because it's President's Day. It's jumping like it's usually kind of slow on a Monday, but plenty of people in the garden and inside of Roberta's. And as you know, Roberta's is the location of two sustainable shipping containers, also known as Heritage Radio Network. We have Sonar Weathers in the studio, if you're just tuning in, and she can be found on Twitter at Sonara Jamila, which is S-A-N-U. R-A-J-A-M-I-L-A. Sonara, darling.
Hello.
Let's play this new game I came up with last night. It's called the Food Inspiration Game. It goes like this. I give you the medium and you give me the first two things that pop in your mind that inspire you. Books.
Edna Lewis.
Ah, God, no, right?
Edna Lewis. And what is that book called?
It's Country, which country. One? The flavors of country cooking, which
right
one?
Here. Pursuit of the Taste of Country Cooking.
That's it. I have that one.
I am loving that book. I haven't finished reading it, but it's amazing how I'm learning how seasonal cooking, especially in Southern food, there's so much food that we take for granted that's available every day that was not available all the time.
Exactly. And when we're talking about, you know, in the first segment of our show, we're talking about Black History Month, and we're talking about honoring Black History Month through food. Her book is like an excellent thing or something to read, how deep the Black food experience is in terms of the types of things she was cooking. That book was full of all types of different meats and veggies. And
yes, fried chicken, believe it or not, I was learning when I read that book, was only served in late spring to early summer.
Exactly.
It was never served throughout the year.
And definitely, I mean, you know, I grew up in the South. My mom will tell you they did not have meat except for maybe on Sundays they would have fried chicken, mm-hmm. and not even every Sunday. So,
yeah,
I think people forget that. Okay, next medium, blogs. Two things that come to mind.
I'm going to say blackgirlchefswhites.com. And that is written by Cheryl D. Lee.
Oh, I never heard of that. What's the name of the blog? Say it again.
It's called Black Girl. Let's say blackgirlchefswhites.com. Mm-hmm. She works. She has worked with Chef Emeril Lagasse. She is a chef instructor at the California School of Culinary Arts, and she educates students in classical French cooking methods. She says the title is from the title of her blog is from the many professional kitchens she's worked in, where she is the black girl in Chef's Whites among a lot of white and Latino men in Chef's Whites.
That's deep.
Yes. And she has very good recipes, very inspiring. And just the fact that she's a professional out there. And I do go to her site a lot, and I comment. And I actually won a hibiscus syrup on her site one time.
Boy, don't you love winning stuff? It's always great to get free stuff, right?
I do.
Is she on social media? Do you know if she's on Twitter or has a Facebook fan page?
I think she might have a Facebook fan page. I don't think she's on Twitter.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I'll have to go to her website when she... That's very interesting. So, do you have another blog that inspires you?
Melissa Danielle's.
Oh, we love Melissa. I love Melissa Danielle.
Yes, I love Melissa. When she talks, I listen. She's a Brooklyn, she's definitely the heart of Brooklyn, where I'm learning a lot from her and from you too.
Oh, thanks. My blog sucks, though.
Well, the radio show is phenomenal because I'm hearing the voices of Brooklyn in the food movement and hearing the conversations. So I love you and Melissa a lot, just learning a lot from
you. Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to say this. One of the things that I'm trying to do, Sonar, is not to give the same boring stuff, and just listening to you now, even the blog that I'd never heard of, just giving people great content. So I'm glad that the show is inspiring you in some way. Glad to hear that.
It does.
And the last medium, family. When I give you the medium family, what inspires you?
My dad. Hands down, it's definitely my father. He taught me how to cook. When I started learning how to cook, many of the techniques and the recipes were very familiar to me. I innately knew it because I was that little girl sitting at the kitchen table watching him cook, scraping down the cake pan, making the bechamel sauce. I never knew that people had a difficult time making white sauce, but to me it was so easy to make. And if I made a mistake or the sauce was too thin, I just automatically knew what to do to fix it. So he's definitely my inspiration. He's really good on meat, which I actually am not. I'm good at it, but we inspire each other. Excuse me. Where I teach him more about vegetables, pushing it to the main, making it more of a main dish.
Yeah.
And I still call him about meat different, and he's really good. He fries turkeys. He roasts. He smokes it. When I brought my boyfriend over for the first time, my father was saying, "Did y'all two want a steak?" And we don't, both of us don't eat steak, but we were looking at it.
It looked good,
it
right?
It did look good.
So, Dad, I know he's going to be happy to listen to this and hear you say that. He probably already knows that he's the inspiration.
Yes.
So I have to ask you this one last question. We have probably about a minute or two. We only have, a few more official days of Black History Month. And so if you had to dream up a dinner to celebrate Black History Month, give me the menu, the guests, dead or alive, and what music you would have playing in the background.
All right. Here is my menu. I thought about it, and it would have to be for... I received this book. It's by Mark Bitterman, and it's called Salted. So I would definitely serve one of his recipes where he takes goat cheese, rolls it up in cocoa nibs, and sprinkles it with a black flaky sea salt. And I would take slices of that and serve it on a miniature baguette.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the appetizer. The next course would be fried oysters with a fennel and zucchini coleslaw.
Ooh.
The main course would be a orange black tea smoked duck, which I think in our community, there's such an Asian influence in our community. And I thought that would be a perfect homage and something to explore outside of fried chicken. The next one I would do is a sweet potato rum souffle. Ooh. I love.
Oh my God, that sounds wonderful.
I love, my dad did that so many years ago. I love souffles, that eggy and that lightness, mm-hmm. airiness of it. Of course, I've been eating this all weekend. Brazilian collard greens. And I have a little bit of, we were talking about how to pronounce it, harissa or harissa.
Yeah.
How do you?
I say harissa. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. Is that Jessica B. Harris, that Brazilian collard green recipe? Is that her recipe that you're talking about? Or I feel like I saw her recently.
I've been eating it for a while. Mm-hmm. Even before her book came out, it's something that I learned about it. I don't, 1 or 2 years ago. I don't know. It's such a simple recipe.
Yeah.
Just garlic and onions. And
your guests, dead or alive, and yes, music.
My guests, definitely my father, Edna Lewis, my boyfriend, Chef Marcus Samuelson. And then there's this chef, Keith Rhodes of Ketch in Wilmington, North Carolina. He is one of the nominees for this year's James Beard Foundation's Award for the Best Chef in the Southeast. And I've looked at his menu several times, and I would love to have a conversation with him about what is inspiring him in his recipes, because he does this Asian influence, definitely with a Southern mix.
Oh, wow.
And definitely my guest, Barack Obama.
I like that. They love good food,
yes,
right?
And his wife, and definitely those two.
And music, finally. Jack, our producer, who loves music. I'm sure he's waiting to hear this.
Esperanza
Spalding?
Yes.
Oh, the Bieber fans are going to be, they're going to be mad about that, huh?
Well, hey, you know, I'm not knocking him. I'm definitely not knocking him. But she has this beautiful voice that I think would be a beautiful background music to the conversation going on, because I would be at the table quiet and listening to the conversation.
Totally. Sanara, thank you so much for stopping by Hot Grease.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, I'm sure they know, if you've been listening the entire time, you know that your blog is
My Life Runs on Food. Please come and visit.
Thank you. Listeners, thank you again for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Join me every Monday at 3:30 Eastern live on heritageradionetwork.com. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.
Well, I think part of the sourcing process to me is the most exciting, because you know, you rent a car and you drive through the south of France, and you know, you obviously have some appointments set up, but you know, some of the most exciting things happen when you're just kind of winging it. And you meet a farmer at, you know, a wine fair, and he says, "Well, come back to my estate," and you're not quite sure where you're going, and you follow a guy in a Peugeot, you know, up a rambling hill, and all of a sudden you come across either a castle or like a shack in the woods, and the guy's making wine out of the back of his, you know, house, or he could be making wine out of a major estate. You know, looks are deceiving, but you want to assume that someone with a very established chateau is making good wine. But 9 times out of 10, the guy out of the garage who's like super passionate is making these better wines, and they're maybe more rustic and less polished. So to me, like the restaurateur, the sommelier, this story resonates with them about the small farmer, you know, the guy who's making wine on small quantities, 80 cases, 100 cases. Those are the things exciting to Barterhouse, and hopefully the things exciting to our clients.